Good evening, Chicago. Good evening, America. This is WGN 720 AM broadcasting 50,000 clear channel watts out of Chicago to 38 states and most of Canada. And this is WGN Nightside True Crime. I always make my partner in crime laugh when I do that.
It's so much.
Yes, that's what we try to do, is bring so much to our audience. So tonight, as always, my partner in crime, Kelly Richmond Pope.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Hi, and I'm Bill Cressy, known as Professor Fraud down there at Governor State University. And we have got a chock full show tonight.
That we do.
It's
with cake.
With cake. We have cake here. And
you haven't eaten yours yet.
I haven't eaten mine yet, but, trying to find a fork first, you know what?
Your fingers are there for
it. I could do that, too. Oh, and it's good cake, too. But that's related to a guest coming up later in the show.
Yeah, we have several people.
We've got several calling in and in studio. And in studio right now is, you want to introduce your in studio guest?
Sure. This is David Harris. And I met David. I've heard of David, but I met him at a conference he was doing about dental embezzlement.
Whoa. Dental embezzlement?
Yes, he's created this niche for himself. Mm. And he just left my class and spoke to my students about dental embezzlement. I bet you didn't know about
They're
it.
Stealing teeth?
Sort of.
Ooh. That would make you feel down in the mouth. Bah. Okay.
And so who's calling in?
And calling in on the phone right now is the fabulous Steve Burness, president of the Chicago chapter. Actually, it's what? Chicago and Northern Illinois chapter of the Better Business Bureau. Is that the title, Steve?
That is correct, Bill. How are you today?
I am fine, sir. And you are calling in because, you know, Kelly, you know what next week is? Coming up next week?
Coming up. Do I know what next week
yes.
is?
Yes.
I know what this week is.
Well, this week is what?
And Fraud Awareness Week.
Yes, International Fraud Awareness Week. And, you know, that's like big celebration for Kelly and me. But next week, next Thursday is?
You want me to read your mind?
Thanksgiving Day.
Okay.
I thought maybe you would know that one. Not in Canada, because Canada was back when we celebrated Columbus Day, or Indigenous Persons Day. But that same day is Thanksgiving in Canada. But we got Thanksgiving. But the big thing, since Kelly and I are both business professors, is the following day, known as Black Friday.
If you support Black Friday, you say it. I don't support Black Friday.
Well, Black Friday, it's called that because that's the day that many stores finally get into the black, because they finally have sufficient sales to make a profit. And then following the weekend, you have Cyber Monday.
You want me to read your mind?
Yes, I do.
You keep pointing to me like we rehearsed this ahead of time.
Okay, Cyber Monday. And that's the day that a majority of Americans do no work at work, but are instead on their computers buying things off the internet.
I've never in my life purchased anything on Cyber Monday.
Well, that's probably a good thing. And the following day is then
Tuesday.
Giving. I tell you, she's got a keen grasp of the obvious. Yes, that would be Giving Tuesday, when you're asked that if you have any money left after Cyber Monday,
or
that you give it to a charity.
After people have scammed you out of all your money, do you have any money left?
Well, that's why we have Steve Burness on tonight, okay? Because Steve, as the president of our area Better Business Bureau, he knows all about all the various scams, and this time of the year, lots of scams going on, right, Steve?
Especially this time of the year around the holiday season. As you know, everybody's out there trying to get a great deal, and the scammers know where to go, and they actually follow the money themselves. So they realize that a lot of people, 71%, will be shopping on Black Friday, and a lot of money is being spent, and they want to take a piece of that pie from you and separate you from your money, as you know. So they're very good at it. And there's some, you know, businesses out there that are not good, do things well either.
Go ahead.
No, you got a combination of both. You got scam artists, and you got some bad businesses out there who try to take advantage of the situation.
What are some of the bigger complaints that you've had in years past, and you anticipate in the coming year?
We always get those doorbuster type scams or fake sales, as consumers put it. They have these doorbuster sales to get into the place, and they have these great TV buys for really cheap price. But they only have two available, or sometimes they have these doorbuster prices where consumers allege that it's cheaper somewhere else, or they could have got it cheaper, throughout the year at that establishment. So, wow. I think by and large, most consumers don't do their due diligence before going out shopping and finding out, what they want to buy first.
Yeah, so they actually sort of jack up the price and then say there it's a sale, right?
Basically, it's a sale, or they just make it a knockoff a little bit and say, this is a great sale, it's a one-of-a-kind sale, when they can get it somewhere else for that same price. Most retailers want you to go out and, shop on Black Friday. They want you to buy something you didn't want to buy. And that's the key, is that they're trying to entice you. It's a great marketing opportunity. It's a great way to get you into that spirit, and that you got these great deals that you can't say no to. And unfortunately, sometimes you have to, because you can end up paying in the long run.
Right. And then on Monday, as I say, Cyber Monday, lots of cyber scams, right?
Cyber scams, the big problem, Bill, and is that there's so many fake organizations out there and so many counterfeit products, and consumers don't really realize the amount of fraud on the internet, and it's just replete with fraud in many different areas. Again, there's great businesses out there. I'm not trying to make it sound like there's a ton of bad businesses out there, but there are some bad actors out there who ruin it for everybody else. Mm-hmm. Every year we see a plethora of complaints, from many things. Mostly it's fake websites where you go to a site and it's not even a real company. It's just a company using a similar name or one character different in the URL. Or, fake products, and they don't even have the products either. Last year, yeah, we had a big problem with Prada purses. There was these fake suppliers and even Prada on their website saying, please avoid these organizations.
I'll tell you what, we'll come back and talk about all this good stuff. And, of course, if any of our listeners want to join in the conversation, can text or call 312-981-7200. And we'll be back here on WGN 720 right after this. Nothing like a little ABBA, really get you going at night. Okay, we have lots and lots of studio guests but on the phone right now is Steve Burness of the Better Business Bureau, and
Hey, Steve, I have my mouth full with cake, so hold on a second.
No problem.
But I had a question. I wanted to take a couple steps back, and can you let our listeners know what the Better Business Bureau does and then what the Chicago chapter does and why it's important?
Sure. The Better Business Bureau is a nonprofit organization started almost 100 years ago to try to really, our main goal is to advance marketplace trust and really, in essence, level the playing field. So the Better Business Bureau provides a wealth of information, education to consumers before they purchase, not after. A lot of times, we will help consumers with complaints, but we prefer consumers reach out to us first to provide some education to them or information on businesses and or charities and determine whether or not they want to do business with them. We'll give them a letter grade of the organization and tell them the track record of the organization for the last 3 years, what consumers have told us. So we're not going to tell you to stay away from a company, but we'll provide you the tools necessary to decide whether or not you want to do business with that organization.
I thought about calling the Better Business Bureau when my wedding ring was stolen during a move.
Ooh.
I used a Chicago mover, mm-hmm, which will remain nameless,
mm-hmm,
but I thought about calling the Better Business Bureau.
Well, now you're talking to the main man. Maybe we'll put you together after the show. How about that?
Beware, moving company. I'm coming for you.
There you go. And speaking of Better Business Bureau Chicago chapter, you've got a big event coming up this week, right, Steve?
Yeah, we have our Torch Award for Marketplace Ethics coming up on Wednesday afternoon. And basically, the Better Business Bureau provides an award for companies that have ethical business practices and really who really espouse it to be great organizations. Being a recipient of these awards is companies that really have lived up to the high standards, you know, promoted by our office. And consistently demonstrate and integrate them into their daily business practices. So basically, Torch Award is a spotlight on organizations who have done it right, and consumers are the ones that actually nominate these organizations. So we had over 350 organizations were nominated this year, and we have 6 winners.
Ooh, can you tell us any of the winners, or is that a deep, dark secret until Wednesday night?
It's still a secret till Wednesday afternoon, so we'll let you know issue release at that time.
Okay, very good. Well, again, we have you on, Steve, because next week starts the, well, though it seems if you look around town, it seems like the Christmas shopping season started like a week before Halloween. But it really takes off next week, the day after Thanksgiving, with Black Friday, and then the following Monday, Cyber Monday. And we were talking a little bit about some of the cyber scams out there. What any you were mentioning, like completely phony websites, but look like real websites?
Yeah, they actually just copy and paste. So people think, wow, it looks like a great, you know, Fortune 500 organization, Bill. And that's all they basically do is right-click, copy and paste, and put a website together and make it look like it's a glorious website, and that they have all this stock of merchandise, and it's so much cheaper than you could have got it anywhere yourself. So a lot of times you're steered towards these companies through either, you know, social media post or a private message or in Craigslist or something like that, where they kind of steer you to a website that you don't even know where you're going to, and these URLs, you know, click here for a great deal within 30 seconds. And that's why the Better Business Bureau is always concerned about consumers who don't do their due diligence and check out a company ahead of time. As, you know, Kelly mentioned, when people complain, we put that information into the database so consumers are aware of the pattern of complaint. So we need consumers to call us to let us know what's happening, and then we put this information in the report. So consumers calling ahead of time will be foretold that these are difficult problem organizations. But again, a lot of these companies, you know, start up in the morning, you know, and it can be gone the next day. So just because they don't have a track record with the Better Business Bureau or anywhere on the internet doesn't make them a good company. Mm-hmm. It could be companies too new to establish that record, and they could be here today and gone tomorrow.
Right, right. And as you say, you could get, you know, an email saying, you know, click on this link, and the link could say whatever, but when you actually click on it, they take you to some other site. And how do you prevent something like that?
Well, we always suggest you never follow links. You know, if you want to go to a website, find out the organization you want to go to and type in the URL yourself. It's when you follow those links and you can end up going to a third-party site that actually can put malware, spam on your system and lock your system up, hold it hostage, hold it for ransom. And they know what they're doing, these scam artists. And it works well. We had a police station in the south suburbs a few years ago. They had to pay the ransomware to get their computers unlocked by these scammers. So,
holy cow. Yeah.
If it happens to the police, it happens to the government, it happens to a lot of people. And people, and again, you don't realize the damage they can do by getting into your system. So yeah. Don't follow links. Go to the website yourself directly of companies you know and trust.
Yeah, and I can imagine, again, Cyber Monday, a lot of folks are shopping online from their employer's computer system. And, you know, it's bad enough if you get caught shopping online during work hours, but if you shut down the employer's computer system, that wouldn't be too good. You're probably going to be getting called up to HR for that.
More than that, sometimes it's termination, so you got to be very careful. We're concerned about the Better Business Bureau's phishing scams, and those are emails that come to you. It looks like it's coming from somebody you know or somebody you trust, and it says, you know, from your bank, and says, click here, or we need this information. And once you click here, you're opening up your computer to, you know, spam or malware, which then can affect the corporate computer. So a lot of the identity theft is done through the phishing emails with the, you know, PA. phishing. Those are the phishing emails where they say they're, you know, trying to say that there's somebody who they're not, and they want you to click on that link.
Okay. And
so how does a consumer know to go to the Better Business Bureau to find out, like, how you've rated a business? Or is it a situation where a person signs up for a newsletter and you send out email blasts, or do they have to go to the website and retrieve the information?
We ask you to go to our website. It's at BBB.org, and that's an international database with about 4 million businesses that are listed with the BBB, and we let you know whether or not they are BBB-accredited business or what their letter grade is and what consumers have told us for the last 3 years, whether they meet our standards, whether they have governmental action against their marketplace conducts, whether their ads are misleading, whatever the case may be, gather all this information and put it together in a report for consumers to decide by reading it whether or not they want to do business with that company or not.
Now, after Cyber Monday comes Giving Tuesday, which is become a big thing to get people to make donations in the holiday spirit on the Tuesday following Thanksgiving Day. And this is probably the most despicable types of frauds out there, right, Steve?
It is. It's terrible what these some of these scammers will do. They'll pull on the heartstrings of consumers and take advantage of the people that are really trying to donate, trying to make a difference in this world. You know, according to Giving USA, last year Americans gave $427 billion to charity.
Oh, that's billion with a B.
With a billion. Unfortunately, the scammers hear that, see that, and they want a piece of the pie as well. And it happens too regularly, as you know, Bill, with even storms and disasters, that these scammers will start creating these fake websites. And the most problems we see, along with the other organizations, are the copycat charities, where they, you know, I have the word cancer in their name, or what a similar word to a major, you know, cancer society. And you think you're donating to them when you're actually donating to a scammer or a bad charity that really just takes the money and runs with it, or lines their pockets with it. Again, we ask consumers to give, but give wisely. Investigate before you invest, and know who you're giving the money to. And again, a legitimate charity, Bill and Kelly, will be a charity that wants your money today. They're going to want it tomorrow. They're going to want it next year. It's the ones that rush you and need the money today.
Right, right. So again, for whether it's you're making a purchase or making a charitable donation, the thing is to do your due diligence, you know, check into it, make sure, you know, go to them rather than respond to something that you receive, because it's, I don't want to say very likely, but there's a high likelihood that it's actually coming from a fraudster.
Exactly. They try to steer you to another website or off that website to something that you don't understand or know. Again, I've been doing this for 32 years, as you know. My biggest frustration is for consumers who don't check ahead of time, you know, with the Better Business Bureau, with other sources too, not just us, but the organization. They call us after to file a complaint, which, yeah, of course, we can handle their complaints, but sometimes the company's not there, or you can never find the company again, or they're really a scam artist. You're not going to get your money back. So I guess consumers really think of the BBB as a complaint agency, when we actually were more of a educational agency and whether or not to do business with that organization. So we always say, before you buy or hire, BBB it. At least get information about the organization ahead of time. And, you know, last year we had a woman in Omaha who lost $100,000 to a fake lottery scam. And she was, you know, played for 6 months with this organization stealing money from her. And then she called us on the seventh month. And we told her within, you know, 5 seconds it's a scam.
Yeah.
If she would have called us first, she wouldn't have lost $100,000. And that's probably the worst part of our jobs, as you know, Bill, is talking to the individuals who lost their life savings.
Well, can you stick with us for a little bit more?
Of course.
Steve? Okay. Well, tell you what, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with more on WGN 720 right after this. Yes. Welcome back to Celebrity Apprentice. No, that song was used on that show, too. But We're talking money, we're talking scams, and when you're talking scams, you're talking Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau. That was a terrible introduction for you, Steve.
Yeah, it was, but it's okay.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
But, and Steve's got a big event coming up Wednesday night. What's the name of your awards again?
BBB Torch Award for Marketplace Ethics. So if you know of a great organization, you can nominate them for our Torch Award for Marketplace Ethics.
And I'm guessing it's a sold-out event.
It is a sold-out event, and it's Wednesday afternoon. But again, right at Thursday, we'll start taking nominations for next year. So we ask consumers to let us know, because there's many great businesses out there. Unfortunately, we only hear about the bad actors sometimes.
Yeah, and I know this is a busy week for you, and so we're going to let you roll over and go back to sleep. But you sent me an alert that the BBB put out just this evening about something called a secret sister scam. What's that all about?
Basically, it's a secret sister scam that's been on the internet, mostly on Facebook, and it's around since 2015, but this year it's just really taken off. It's a gift exchange where they say that you can join this list and, you know, send one gift and you'll get 10 gifts in return. So basically, it's a pyramid scheme, and the Postal Inspection Service has told us this is illegal still. So you'll see these types of, offers and gift exchange that consumers are talking about in post to join it, you know, sign it and put your name on it and send one gift and you'll get 10 or 12, 14 and back. And unfortunately, it's a pyramid scheme, so the only person that gets it is the person on the top and everybody else on the bottom doesn't get anything. And it's been a scam that's really been around since 2015, as I mentioned, but it is growing in popularity, and we just can't seem to put a stop to this particular scam.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people fall for the various types of pyramid schemes. And how quickly that bottom of that pyramid grows. I know somebody said, depending on how many people you're supposed to notify, within like 16 levels, you've got like the population of the earth.
Yeah. It seems to be. Really is. Everybody wants something for nothing in today's society, and they just don't do their homework and research, and that's unfortunate.
Okay, now, Steve, again, we're going to cut you loose so you can roll over and go back to sleep. But any last comments with the big shopping season coming up starting next week, to consumers?
The most important thing is to really do your research before you go out, not only on the product itself and the price you want to buy, but the organization. There's a lot of bad actors who will try to separate you from your money as well. And consumers are not prepared are the ones that always seem to be victimized the most. Businesses take a lot of time in researching their products and getting everything ready for Black Friday, and you as a consumer should as well, you know, by creating a budget and sticking to it. The retailers make money or try to make more money as they want you to come in their store and buy something that you weren't planning on buying. And especially in the holiday season, you get into that hype, everybody that Black Friday, and then all of a sudden it's, the weekend, and everybody's looking for these great deals. But again, you know, make sure you check with the Better Business Bureau first, and also do some research on the product itself and make certain it's the correct product that you want to buy.
Because there's a lot of Grinches out there. Yeah.
A lot of Grinches will separate you from money. And people, you know, they always say, you can't tell what a criminal looks like. I've met many, and you've met many, Bill, in your life as well. They look like us. They dress like us. They talk like us. So they act like us. So you got to be very careful. And they're good at it, and they know what they're doing.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Really appreciate you coming in, or at least, you know, phoning in. And
my pleasure.
Talking to you. And who knows? We may have you on, you know, we get closer to Christmas Day itself. Thanks a lot.
I hope, Steve. I have cake then.
There you
it's
go. We'll have
gone.
You in studio. Well, tell you what, Steve. If you come in studio, you know, later, I'll bake a cake. Okay.
Oh, yeah,
I make a great bun cake. I really do. I'm great at bun cakes. Okay. Thanks a lot, Steve. But now,
have a good day.
Take care. Now in studio, Kelly, who is this man sitting next to you?
Well, this man sitting next to me is David Harris, and David has carved out a dental empire, if you will. So, David, welcome to True Crime tonight. What's your background? How did you get into this field?
I'd like to tell you that I had some great business plan, and you know, I saw an opportunity and I chased it. And the truth is somewhat different. I had done various things in my life. The last thing I did before this was I was working for a bank, and I lasted a few years, and finally I just got tired of it and quit my job.
So when Kelly says you've built a dental empire, you're not a dentist?
I'm not a dentist. I'm a CPA, although I wouldn't read too much into that. I'm also a certified fraud examiner and a private investigator.
Oh, so again, how did you get into this dental area?
Well, as I was saying...
Yes. Sorry for the interruption.
It's okay. So I was I quit my job with the bank, and I was sitting at home and trying hard not to think about what I was going to do for the rest of my life, and the phone rang. And it was a guy I'd been in high school with who was now a dentist. And he put his sob story on me, which was that I think my office manager is stealing from me and I don't have anyone else to call.
Mm.
So he caught me at the perfect time. This was 1989, Bill. And, you know, in those days, there was no such thing as Netflix. So you watched whatever the network chose to share with you. And it was the middle of August and it was all reruns.
Mm-hmm.
So I really didn't have any good reason not to help him. And
What
I said to him is, I'll come over to your practice tonight after it closes, and we'll get to the bottom of this. So I came to his office and saw fairly quickly what his office manager was doing. I mean, she was stealing.
And so this was a small one-person dental practice.
Exactly, and most dental practices are kind of almost quasi-family businesses. You know, The average practice probably has 6 or 7 employees. There are some that are much bigger, but this was kind of the mom and pop organization.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw what she was doing, and by today's standards, it would be pretty crude. And I came back the next morning to help my friend fire her because he didn't want to face that alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I left there with a promise from him to buy me dinner that I'll point out I'm still waiting for. But you know, who keeps track of that kind of stuff?
Right. Especially when he's got a big problem like this going on.
Yeah, and I really didn't think anything more of it. And that all changed 2 weeks later. 2 weeks later, I was going into my own dentist's office for an appointment. And just imagine what went through my mind when I had my hand on my dentist's front door, and I was about to go in, and I looked through the glass in the door, and sitting at his front desk was the same woman who I helped fire 2 weeks ago at the other practice.
Oh!
What I said was a lot less printable than that.
Yeah. But, was she a new hire, or she'd been working there?
No. After my friend fired her, my own dentist hired her.
Oh.
So I ran to a payphone because this was 1989. And
there were payphones around.
Cell phones were like the size of a briefcase.
Mm-hmm.
And called the practice, and I knew I had to get past the gatekeeper, so I used a bit of a pretext to get through to the doctor and got him on the phone and explained why I wasn't sitting in his chair when I was supposed to be, and he hired me on the spot.
Wow.
And by the time I finished his file, some of the local people in the dental supply business had learned what I was doing, and I had 2 more calls, and suddenly I was in business.
Wow.
So what commonalities do you notice with dental practices? And if there are any dentists that are up right now listening, feel free to join our conversation by calling or texting at 312-981-7200. So what issues do you see that dentists have, dental offices have?
There are a number of things, Kelly, that make them vulnerable. First of all, I think very few dentists chose their career because they had this unquenchable desire to be a business owner. For almost every dentist I've ever met, running the business is kind of the distasteful part that comes with giving people beautiful smiles and making them feel good about themselves.
And that's probably consistent with most entrepreneurs, would you say? Like a hairstylist, a manicurist.
Even lawyers I've seen and other professionals and even engineers and stuff. I've seen this in a number of different fields.
Absolutely. I mean, the essence of being a professional is a love for that profession. And it's understandable that whatever takes you away from that, you view as undesirable.
Right.
And dentists, for the most part, love the basic part of what they do. And when satisfaction surveys are done for job satisfaction, dentists come out very high.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask any of them, you know, what's the stressful part of doing what you do? They will say it's dealing with staff, it's dealing with irate patients. You know,
right.
it's the management end of it. So none of them have a love for that. And a lot of them struggle with the difference between delegation and abdication.
Right.
So, and delegation is where you give somebody responsibility, but they have accountability back to you. And abdication is where you say, I don't ever want to hear about this again. And when somebody comes along and says, Doctor, I'll take care of the business, and you just go into your operatory and you do beautiful dentistry on people, that's exactly what they want to hear. But right.
But it also opens yourself up to be defrauded. You know, something that we talked about tonight in class was how the work environment has changed so much. There used to be the time where you knew more than the person that you hired. But now you tend to hire someone that knows a skill set that you don't know. And so I would imagine that dentists are just at the mercy of their office staff because they don't know the system. They don't know all the ins and outs of how the payments work or how the anything works because they're focused on their craft.
Running any business is complex. Running a dental business is particularly complex. I mean, they have to deal with everything that everybody else does, and they also have to deal with a very compliance-oriented regulatory environment. So OSHA, the Occupational Health and Safety Act, HIPAA for health information, you know, dentists who are nice guys trying to run a business or nice gals trying to run a business have to deal with a particularly complex environment. And as you say, they can't know everything about it. And the decision you have to make as a practicing dentist is, well, what part of that do you sort of step away from? And running the business is a very common one for them to say, you know what, I'm not going to be involved in this. I mean, when I talk to groups of dentists, I tell them that the software that runs their practices is at least as important to their profitability as their handpiece, which is, you know, the tool mm-hmm. they use to
clean your teeth or whatever.
Do dental work yeah. on you. And well, and they all know the handpiece like it's their child, but...
Yeah. Well, tell you what, let's come back to this incredible conversation right here on WGN 720 right after this.
I just want you to do your regular speaking voice just sometimes. Tell me hear it.
Okay, this is Professor Bill Crossing.
And we are here in studio with David Harris of Prosperident. I said it correctly, Prosperident. And David has created or developed a unique practice in understanding dental embezzlement. So welcome back, David.
Thank you.
So tell us, I know you've been doing this for years. You've seen a lot. What is that top story, that top case that just keeps you up at night when you think about it?
I don't know if I let any of them keep me up at night, but we've certainly seen everything from the mildly hilarious to the absolutely shocking. And I can remember a dentist who had to call the police on his daughter.
What happened?
Embezzling. She was embezzling from his practice, and she was also using his prescription pads to get narcotics. And he told me after the embezzlement, I could have lived with because it was just kind of an advance on her inheritance. but the narcotics, I couldn't.
Yeah.
One of the funniest calls I ever got came from an orthodontist, and he called me and he said, I practice with another orthodontist. And the two of us have this arrangement where when patients pay in cash, we just put it in our pockets and we don't tell the IRS. But the reason I'm calling you, David, is that I think my partner is stealing more than I am.
And well, I hope the first thing you told him is, don't say any more. Call a lawyer, have the lawyer hire me, but then you have attorney-client privilege and something like that. But go ahead.
Let me say that he was right, first of all. And secondly, the report that we wrote in that file was probably one of the most artistic we have ever done.
Because I like that, artistic.
There was this large elephant in the room that we had to step carefully around.
Mm.
But, you know, we see million-plus-dollar thefts on... on occasion.
Wow.
And so on your website, one of the things I enjoy is your wall of shame. Can you talk about your, first of all, where is your website? What is your website? And talk about your wall of shame.
Okay. The website name is easy to remember. It's www.dentalembezzlement.com. And the only trick there is spelling embezzlement correctly. But, you know, if you if you come close, Google will probably help you out.
There you go.
So, yes, we have part of our website called the Hall of Shame, and that's where we profile embezzlers in dental practices. We have about 680 of them profiled, and we award them various badges. So there's what's called the $1 million club for our really high achievers, and those are people who have embezzled more than $1 million. Mm-hmm. There's also the $500,000 club, which is a little bit less exclusive. And then we have the group who we broadly call high achievers, and generally generally these people are serial embezzlers. In other words, they've moved from practice to practice, and they've stolen in one place and got caught and got fired and then got hired more or less across the street and done it again.
Do the dentists that fire that person for embezzling then give them a good recommendation for the next dentist?
They would give them a lousy recommendation, Bill, if the next dentist only thought to call.
Wow.
That's not something dentists do. What astounds me even more is that dentists don't even drug test people when they hire them. I mean,
whoa.
Yeah.
And these are dentists, and thus they have prescription pads, thus they're using narcotics in their practice.
I can't get a job at FedEx delivering the junk people buy on Amazon without a drug test, and yet I can work in a dental practice. And the difference between FedEx and Amazon is exactly, or between FedEx and a dental practice is exactly what you said. FedEx doesn't have prescription pads sitting there.
Wow.
So the things that are followed in virtually every other industry are not in dentistry. And these people are healers predominantly, and they don't do well with hidden agendas. Yeah. And that makes them easy targets. But yes, they will. I've seen one serial embezzler in particular who has worked in 15 different practices.
Wow.
Holy.
And the only thing that stopped her a couple of times was a trip to prison.
Wow.
So what are some of the schemes that you see? Tell us, like, the top three.
I'm probably not going to comment on specifics simply because
this isn't a how-to program.
Yeah, simply because we don't. Mm-hmm. However, I will say that when I started in this game, cash was the biggest target. Mm-hmm. And over time, that's evolved. Thieves tend to steal checks and credit card payments and what are called ACH payments. ACH means automated clearinghouse. So this is when, for example, an insurance company is paying a dentist for work that the dentist has done, and it's done by transfer directly to the dentist bank account. So any form of wealth transfer is capable of being embezzled, and you know, for the business owners out there, be they dental or other, I'd encourage them to be broad-minded about embezzlement, because when I initially talk to dentists about it, what inevitably is in their mind is the theft of $20 bills,
right?
And cash is the first choice of every embezzler. I mean, it's the easiest to convert, but we're evolving towards being a cashless society.
Right. And I've had business people say to me, oh, well, I don't have a problem with embezzlement because we only take checks and credit cards or wire payments. And I'm like, well, if you think that you can't be ripped off that way, take David to dinner and he'll tell you how. But if it's accessible, it'll get stolen. Yeah.
And technology is definitely the embezzler's friend. Yeah. You know, when I started in this business, the typical dental practice probably took in 10% of its revenue in cash. Hmm. And today I would expect most normal practices for the cash intake number to be something around 2%.
Right.
Most embezzlers want to steal more than that. Mm-hmm. So, and they also know that I couldn't under any circumstance take all the cash because that would be conspicuous. So I need to find a way to convert checks or incoming credit card payments or something like that. The other thing that's different between embezzlement in dental practices and a lot of other businesses is that predominantly it's skimming, in other words, theft of revenue that you see.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in big companies, most of the embezzlement that happens on the expense side. And in dentistry, and I'm assuming other small businesses, I really only work in dentistry, so I have no expertise in anything else, but certainly in dentistry, theft of revenue is probably 85% of the embezzlement that we see.
I would think so.
So once the dentists come to a workshop, what typically is their next step after they've sat and listened to you and you've scared them, I'm sure, about what to look for or what to be careful of? What's typically their next step?
It depends on what their level of concern is. I mean, what I do in public speaking, Kelly, is I talk a lot about how thieves behave. And an interesting statistic in dentistry, when we look at how embezzlement is uncovered in dentistry, the majority of it comes not because of some kind of financial anomaly, but a behavioral one. In other words, most embezzlement in dentistry is uncovered because of the way that a thief is acting.
Well, we are going to take a break. You've given us a lot to think about during this break, and so we'll be back shortly. True crime. So we are back with true crime.
Yes.
This is Kelly Rich. I don't know.
That's Kelly Richmond Pope over there, and I'm Professor Fraud, Bill Cressing.
And David, we are in studio with David Harris of Prosperident, and we are talking about dental embezzlement. And so if someone is interested in connecting with you, how do they find you?
The easiest way is our website, www.dentalembezzlement.com.
Okay. All right. So say, for instance, I'm a dentist. Say Dr. Kelly Richmond Pope stands for DDS at the end of my name, not PhD. And what should I be concerned about if I suspect something is going on in my practice?
The cardinal rule, Dr. Pope, is don't let the suspect know that they're, in fact, a suspect.
Okay.
If I'm stealing from you and I think I'm about to get caught, I may do the equivalent of a Hail Mary pass. And you probably have lots of football fans in your audience, and they all know that a Hail Mary pass is what you throw when
You're
down by 6 points and there are 22 seconds left in the game.
Right.
Kind of like the Bears tried the other day. And
let's not go there.
Sorry, sore point in this audience, I know. If I think I'm about to go to jail and that means that I'm going to lose my social status and, I'm going to have this criminal record that follows me around for a long time, the list of things that I will not do to prevent that is pretty short.
What have you seen in your experiences?
Well, the worst example I've ever seen of making this mistake and having it cost happened to a dentist in Maryland, and his name was Dr. Albert Rowe. And Dr. Rowe had a woman who worked for him named Shante Joyner Hickman. And Shante was embezzling from Dr. Rowe and believed she was about to get caught. So she came back to the practice one night when she knew that Dr. Rowe would be there by himself catching up on some paperwork.
Uh-oh.
And she brought her cousin with her for some muscle. And the two of them took Dr. Rowe, who was a small Korean gentleman, into the patient restroom and beat him to death.
Oh!
And I probably don't have to make this story any worse, Bill, but I'm going to.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
The amount embezzled was $17,000.
They killed him over 17 grand?
Yes.
Well, 17,000 for some people might be a whole lot of money.
Well, but it's more than that. It's also the getting arrested, going to prison, and all that on top.
It's the consequence. It wasn't the money per se, but in Maryland, stealing more than $10,000 is a Class A felony, so the potential prison sentence is 10 years. Now, would somebody on a first offense for $17,000 get that punishment? No. But that may not have entered into the calculations.
And this is what Kelly likes to use the term. This went from being a white-collar crime to a...
red-collar crime. That's Rich Brody's term. Rich and Frank Perry's term that they came up with, when white-collar crime results in murder.
Yeah. And it's not the only example of this, but the point is, if you suspect embezzlement, The confirmation process needs to be one that is carried out very stealthily. And unfortunately, a lot of people, if they try to do it themselves, will trample in the garden.
Right.
And it's important that the process be done in a way that the suspected employees don't have any ability to realize that the light is about to be cast on them.
So, plus, you don't want to, as you're saying, you don't want to mess up like the records, the financial records and stuff, which would be necessary in order to prosecute a good case. But you don't want to tip the person off so they can go in and start trashing the computer files.
Or, as we saw in one case, burning the practice down.
Whoa!
So, yes, we don't want any of those things to happen either. Or, if the dentist's suspicion is misplaced, which happens sometimes, then you don't want to go back to an otherwise perfectly good employee and say, you know what, there was a moment in time when I didn't trust you, so I had an audit done. But don't worry, you did fine.
That's what happened in the Dixon, Illinois case with Rita Cronwell. When her fraud was discovered, one of the things that Kathy Swanson was told is by the mayor was, wait, we could be wrong. If we're wrong, we could ruin this person's life. And so that really held them back from coming forward immediately.
But how long does, like, one of your investigations take? How long do you have to keep dealing with this person without showing any signs?
The entire investigation, Bill, typically takes about 8 to 9 weeks. But having said that, if embezzlement is happening, it's our expectation that we'll find it much more quickly than the last day that we're working on the file.
Right.
You know, 4 weeks would be a pretty good guess. And you're absolutely right. It's a big ask to say to a dentist or any other business owner, you know, you have to go in and put on a happy face and pretend like nothing's happening while internally, you know, your guts are kind of churning about this.
Wow.
Well, you have given us a lot to think about, and I hope that any dentists or aspiring dentists out there are listening and taking notes. Your website again, if they want to find out more information about what you do and how to keep their practice safe.
www.dentalembezzlement.com.
And where to next for you?
I'm off to Memphis in the morning.
Talking to some more dentists?
Yeah, I'm speaking at a dental society there, so I'll be addressing an audience of dentists and
head over to Graceland for the tour.
Yeah, I think I might.
There you go. And what do we got coming up on the show?
Well, we have a great story, great man. Kiwan Hester is joining us to share his story and eat some more cake. I'm sure you can't eat any more cake because you're over there.
I've done my ratio. ration of cake over here. Okay, well, in that case, let us take a short break, and we'll be back with the Cake Man right after this on WGN 720. And we're back with WGN Nightside True Crimes. And I'm Professor Fraud Bill Cressy, and the woman across from me with cake in her mouth, Kelly Richmond Pope. Hello, Kelly Richmond Pope. Can
Hi,
you talk
how are
yet?
You? Oh, yes, okay. I'm here. I'm here.
Okay.
Mr. Mike.
You over there, Michael?
Yes, I am. How's it going?
I don't see you eating your cake from flavor dessert.
Oh, he came over here and grabbed some.
Did he eat it, though? He has to taste it.
Yeah, I snuck some cake while... Yeah. I was going to eat it when you were mid-segment. But it looks really good. This cake looks delicious. I love a cake with a lot of, like hearty frosting, and this definitely has it, so I'm very excited to sink my teeth into it.
Yes, and but tell me, Dr. Pope, why do we have cake in the studio tonight?
We have cake in the studio tonight because our next guest is a master baker. His name is Kiwan Hester, and he is joining us all the way from my hometown, Durham, North Carolina, the best city in the world, Bull City.
Whoa. Okay, this Chicago native is going to have to make a point of order on that one.
No. Have you ever been to Durham?
I've been through the RDU airport.
That's not the same thing.
Okay. Well, I guess
not. So, Kiwan, I hear you there. How are you?
How you doing? I'm doing great. How y'all doing tonight?
Well, we're great. I know you're a little tired because you're an hour ahead of us.
And it's but probably warmer than here in Chicago.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Kiwan, let me first start by saying that I am certain I gained 5 pounds today. Certain. First of all, flavored desserts, Your cakes are amazing. Your cupcakes are amazing. So I took him to class today, Bill. So today was the last day of class at DePaul. We're on quarters.
Quarters, right.
And I took the cupcakes because Kiwan FedExed a box to my house. I was in class.
Okay, this explains why you get such high evaluations from your students.
No, it doesn't. So the box came to my house this morning. I had a friend pick the box up, bring it downtown so it could be ready.
I hope you gave your friend a cupcake at least.
I didn't. Uh-oh. I didn't. The box was huge. There was a red velvet cake inside. Oh. There was a pound cake inside.
Can we talk about this pound cake?
Did you have some?
Oh, I did. Oh, man. That pound cake is poundalicious. It really, that is probably one of the best pound cakes. So often, pound cake is dry, which is why you need to put like a lot of ice cream and whipped cream on it. This thing is, and after traveling halfway across the country, that is a magnificent pound cake, sir.
Well, I appreciate it. It's our own signature pound cake. It's called Five Flavor Pound Cake. It got five different flavors in it. Butter, vanilla, coconut, lemon, and rum flavor. And then I pour hot sugar glaze over it, and it soaks into the cake.
Ewan, how many calories is in this cake?
Did you pay for it? Kelly, it was free, therefore there's no calories when it's free. That's the way I always fit.
Okay. That's right.
And you chase it with a Diet Coke. It takes all the calories.
So let me tell you, Kiwan, my co-host Bill ate the cake, and what he just said is true, with a Diet Coke.
Yeah, it takes all the calories away. They counteract each other. You know.
So Kiwan, let's get into your story, your life, man. I've been following you on Facebook, and I've been reading about you for a while, and I didn't know that you shared your story so much until I started looking into it more and more and more, and I thought about reaching out to you probably like earlier this summer, but I just didn't know. And finally, I said, you know what? I'm calling. I'm see. I'm gonna send him a message and see. So tell us a little bit about you. Where are you from? I know where you're from, but tell the listeners where you're from.
Okay, I'm from Durham, North Carolina. Born and raised. Went to Hillside High School. While I was in high school, ninth grade summer, I started hustling drugs.
In ninth grade, Kiwan?
Yeah, ninth grade. Got off track. And as I began to hustle drugs, it became addictive. I was addicted to the lifestyle, just trying to make some fast money so I could support myself so I wouldn't have to ask my mother for money because, we was living up on the one roof, a single parent mother. So I just wanted to take it upon myself and make my own money.
If I can ask, what drugs in particular were you dealing?
Cocaine.
Okay. In ninth grade, Kiwan?
Mm-hmm. Ninth grade, crack cocaine.
Okay.
And so I kept hustling. And by the time I made it to the 12th grade, I didn't really have that many options because my grades were so poor. So while a lot of my friends was going to college, I was still on the track of hustling, and I had my high school sweetheart pregnant, and so out of fear of being a no good dad, I started taking trips to New York to get drugs cheaper at a bulk price. And not even 2 years out of high school, I found myself on the other side of the track of going to prison. Catching a case in August of 95 and going to prison and end up doing 42 months in federal prison. And from there, it was a life changer. It was a processing chamber. A lot of days I just sat down and just analyzed my life. And one day I said, man, how did I sell myself here?
Mm-hmm.
And so, from there I took some college courses and stuff and just tried to stay positive. And I met this gentleman by the name of Cornelius Blackwell. He was an inmate as well. and we was behind the fence at Butner.
Butner. Butner. Yeah. That's where Bernard Madoff is now.
Yeah,
Butner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's where I was. I was right there at the same prison behind the fence. And this gentleman named Blackwell, he was the baker, head baker for the facility. And so I was working in the kitchen. And so I introduced myself to him because he had he was very popular for his pastries and desserts and things of that nature. And so
what did they have you doing in the kitchen at that time?
I worked in the common fare room. This was a very small room where we prepare meals for people that didn't eat pork and things of that nature. We for Jewish people and people, Muslims and things, and people like that, that just didn't eat pork or red meat and stuff like that. So
Kiwan, can I ask this is probably a really silly question, but was the food good at Butner?
No, it was processed food. It was powdered eggs, and the food was terrible. You had to adjust. You had to eat.
Yeah. But the baked goods were really good.
Yeah, that was good. I mean, it wasn't street baked goods, but in prison, it was. I mean, once you got accustomed to the food, it was good. Mm-hmm. And so, even if we had a bad meal, everybody would flood the chow hall just to eat Blackwell's desserts.
He had
a name.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
and you showed the initiative and approached him.
Yeah, I showed the initiative and approached him. And, you know, we just, as I worked in the kitchen, he worked in the kitchen, we would bump into each other and have a small conversation. But after being there at Butner for about a year and some change, it was time for me to go to a prison camp. And so they put in the designation papers. They asked me which one I wanted to go to. I said, well, I want to stay at Butner and go to Butner Prison Camp. But when the designation papers came in, it was Seymour Johnson,
mm-hmm.
and it was in Goldsboro. And I was disappointed, but they said, you know, well, we can put a detainer on you and keep you here, or either you go to Seymour Johnson. And so I said, well, just send me to Seymour. And so I went through transit, and when I get to Seymour, one of the first persons I saw when I got off the bus was Blackwell. I didn't even know he had left because we had like 1,500 inmates on the compound, and so it's easy to get lost in the shuffle. And so once I got off the bus and saw him, I asked him, "Hey man, do you think you can get me a job in the bakery?" And he said, "Of course." And you know, my mindset, if I can get from previously being in the kitchen, I knew that if I could get my hands on some fruit, vegetables, anything of a hot commodity out of the kitchen, sandwiches, cookies, anything, I could, you know, get them up, hustle them on the compound and support myself. So
Kiwan, we're going to take a quick break. So hold tight, okay? We're just going to take a break. Okay, hold on.
We'll be back on WGN.
This is Kelly Pope and Bill Cressy with True Crime on WGN Radio.
That's right. And on the phone, coming all the way from Durham, North Carolina, Kelly Pope's hometown is?
We have Kiwan Hester. Kiwan, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead and talk, Kiwan. I'm going to have more of this pound cake.
He's eating all the pound cake, Kiwan. He's had like 18 pieces.
Oh, that's so good.
That's good. That's good. Good stuff.
So we were at the point of your story, and you know, it's like we can imagine your story. Like, you're such a great storyteller. So we're like, you got off the bus, and the first person you saw was Blackwell.
It's like it was meant to be.
Right. So we're like cheering, like, yeah, you know?
Right.
And so he becomes your mentor. Now, how old is Mr. Blackwell?
He's probably about 55.
Okay.
He's about 55 years old.
Where is he now?
He's in Charlotte.
Okay.
And actually, when I once I started my business, I think last year I caught back up with him, and I went down and thanked him for changing my life, because he really, literally changed my life.
So tell me how it started. So you started. What's the first thing? The first skill that he taught you?
First thing he taught me is measuring out each of the ingredients, you know, accurately. Mm-hmm. So he taught me, you know, measurements first, and then we started just baking. And he showed me step by step. He taught me how to bake everything from scratch. So we baked cookies, cakes, pies, cheesecakes, bread. Everything from scratch. Everything.
So, Kiwan, you can make homemade bread?
Yeah, I can make homemade bread.
Can you send some to Chicago?
No, oh, we've got some good bakeries here in Chicago. Hey, but you're making me hungry,
we
Kiwan.
This is Kiwan's bread.
This is Kiwan's bread. Yeah, I'm going to be, and I'll be heading to an all-night diner as soon as we're done with tonight's show, I fear.
Okay. So, so he taught you everything.
Yeah, he taught me everything, and he told me one day, he said, you know, I'm teaching you this trade, and if all fails, when you go home, you'll have a trade to fall back on.
There you go.
And my mind was still thinking, like, I immediately told him, man, I'm not picking that when I get home. It's just to pass time. And so we kept on baking. And I kind of took a liking to it, but I never saw myself a full-fledged entrepreneur baking with a baking business. And then one day, everything changed when we made the carrot cake. And it was so good that I wrote that recipe down. And we kept eating pan after pan after pan. The kitchen informants had to lock the pans up from the bakers, except because we kept just eating and eating and eating. And so I wrote that one recipe down, and I said, you know, I'm going to try this when I get home. And so, you know, nearing time to be released from prison, you know, I had a lot of experience in the kitchen and the bakery. And so when I was packing up, I made sure I had that one recipe. And so I came home. I didn't, you know, I was getting accustomed, you know, getting back accustomed and with everyday life. I had a job working at Triangle Laboratories. Mm-hmm. And I was a lab technician there. And I didn't bake for the first 2 years.
Wow.
And then one day, my cousin, he was working at the company also, and I told him, look, I'm going to try this carrot cake for our potluck dinner at the job. And, and he said, man, you can't bake no cakes. I said, watch, I'm gonna bake a cake. And so that evening, I went home, pulled the recipe out, and I looked at everything, and mind you, the recipe was equivalent for 900 people. I had to scale it all the way down.
I would hope so.
For one cake, for a cake for 20 people. And so I went to food line, bought all the ingredients, came back, and I had a hand mixer and a silver a pan, and I hand mixed everything, and I poured it in a blunt pan and baked it for about 45 minutes. When it came out, I let it cool, and I made some homemade cream cheese frosting the way I would like it. And I iced it up, and I went to work the next day. And when everybody got in the break room and they went around the room and asked who brought what, when they got to me, I said, I baked a homemade cake from scratch. And everybody was like, nah, you know your grandma made that cake. And so I said, I did. And my cousin co-sign and said, nah, he baked it.
There you go.
And everybody started going around and started cutting the cake. And within about 15 minutes, the cake was gone.
Mm-hmm. And the great thing about a bun cake, too, you get those nice slices off of it.
Yes. And so everybody from that one potluck dinner, I started getting requests from my coworkers. Could I bake them a cake? And I just said, well, yeah, I wouldn't charge. I didn't charge them. I just asked them to give me the money for the ingredients, and I'll bake them a cake.
Right.
And so, you know, one thing led to another, and I wind up getting laid off that job. And so, my bills was coming in, so I said, I got to do something, quick. And so I started going around to every barbershop, beauty salon, nail salon, with slices of cake that I baked out of my townhouse, and I created a buzz.
There you go.
Created a buzz. I didn't even have a business name at first, but then I came up with a name when it got the name registered and got my peddler's license, and I was on my way.
And what's the name of your business again?
Favor, F-A-V-O-R, Favor Desserts Bakery.
And he delivers.
Yeah.
FavorDesserts.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I got a big package today at my house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The people that I work with today, they were like, can I put in my Thanksgiving order? Because I want a bun cake.
I want to know, this pound cake you have, did you develop that recipe?
I found that recipe in a cookbook, and I wanted to try it, and so I tried it, and I kind of tweaked it to the way I would think it would be successfully.
Yeah.
And so once I put my little spin on it, and I put it out there and saw how people respond to it, and I had overwhelming, people just raved over that cake. So,
Kiwan, you have such just an incredible story. Just an incredible story.
Thank you so much.
I don't even know what to say, but wow.
Yeah, and really, going back to a term I used before, you were the one who showed the initiative and approached, what is his name, Blackwell?
And got the
training, the mentoring from him.
Right.
But then just went on and ran with it. And I love stories like that. And can I tell you something else?
Yes, sir.
You're a man after my own heart because I love baking bun cakes. It's a little sideline. Kelly is now looking at me like shaking her head like, what? Yes, I am a bun cake baker.
I know you like to eat them.
I like to eat them. But one day I'll send you my recipe for the margarita cake that uses actual tequila.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Hey, Mike, did you try your cake yet?
Mike's clearing his mouth out right now.
Sorry, I needed to get my bib ready. It was so good, and it really it makes you want more. It's so savory.
Yeah,
well, I appreciate it. Yeah,
the icing on the red velvet cake. Oh man, I can only imagine what your carrot cake and the icing tastes like as well.
It's very good.
And as we all know, carrot cake is a health food. You know, because it's made with carrots, so it counts. It counts as a health food. It counts as your vegetables have your kids eat carrot cake with their meals.
So, Kiwan, how is your business now? How's your business today?
Oh, it's great. In 2012, I opened up my first storefront location. And 2 years ago, I opened up my second location in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Okay, hold on, Kiwan. We're going to hear a little bit more about where you are. We're going to take a break, but don't go anywhere. Okay. I know it's late, but don't go anywhere, okay?
Great.
Yeah, gotcha.
We're taking a break here on WGN 720 AM.
This is Kelly Richmond Pope and Bill Cressy. This is True Crime. Bill is pretending like he's still finishing up his cake.
Well, yes.
Because we have been chomping on cake in studio tonight from Favor Desserts.
And where's Favor Desserts located again, Kelly?
Favor Desserts is located in the best city in the world.
City.
Durham. I'm from Durham, North Carolina. Okay, come on. I live in Chicago, but I'm from Durham.
Okay. Right. Okay. A little bit of favoritism there. And again, folks, you can join in on this conversation by texting or calling us at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, and let's talk cake.
Let's talk cake. Kiwan, you know, when you hear your story, you're just cheering for you, man. Like, you know, it's like the way you tell it. You said, you know, this is where I was, this is what I did, but this is how I came through.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and so we want you to win, right? So you were, before the break, you were telling us about your location. So you opened your first location. Did you say 2012?
Yes, February 12th, 2012. My first location was in Durham, North Carolina, 5607 NC Highway 55, Suite 105 in Durham, North Carolina. And then I've been there about a little over 7 years. And so 2 years ago, I opened up my second location in Breensville, North Carolina.
Yeah. Ah, so you're straddling the whole triangle there.
Triangle triad.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, you know, grow at a reasonable pace and just continue to create buzzes in other areas and try to, you know, continue to evolve with the times.
Okay, but I have to know, you also have a website, and
yes,
you take orders and ship stuff out to, say, Chicago?
Yes, I have a website, Favor, F-A-V-O-R, Desserts, D-E-S-S-E-R-T-S.com, and people can place their orders there online, and I ship next day, FedEx, you get it by 10:30.
Wow. I got, actually, mine came at 9:27.
So if you've got like that big holiday lunch where you work, you can order it. It'll show up in time for lunch. Yeah.
Yes.
Very good.
So, Kiwan, you know, something that the way I described my your story to my students is I told them that you were like the Nipsey Hussle of baked goods. And the reason why I said that is because when I called you and spoke to you, was it on Friday?
Yes.
You were telling me that you had given one of your employees a ride somewhere. Do you remember that conversation?
Yeah.
Can you tell us what you were doing?
One of my best friends who was incarcerated, he just came home from doing close to 19 years and just trying to help him get back on track. So I was giving him a ride to see his probation officer. I had, you know, took off work and went and took him to get, go see his probation officer and took him to get a coat. So I'm just trying to, you know, keep him on the right track, make sure he don't have a relapse and things like that. So yeah, with my bakery, we also, you know, get ex-offenders opportunity to come and work at Baby Desserts. So, because I know what it's like to have a felony and it's hard to get a job. So I use my business, not just a way of making money, but also give back for the community.
Kiwan, you have a good accountant in Durham?
Yes, I do.
I just need to make sure you're straight. That's all.
Well, yeah. I was afraid that DePaul University may be losing a professor to become your accountant and be paid in cake.
No, yeah, I'm an academic accountant.
Oh, okay.
But no, I was just need to make sure you were straight.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm straight.
Okay. Okay. Well, I was going to say, if any of my Governor State students need a job, if you needed a new accountant, I'll send them down there.
No.
But you're all straight on that. Okay. Your story is really, and I was, it's like you read my mind. I was going to ask you if you hire ex-offenders as well, and you do.
Yes, sir. We hire ex-offenders through this job link program, just trying to, you know, let them get reacclimated with society coming out of prison. So, you know, I'm a firm believer if you succeed, if you see success every day, you can conform to success. So, you know, not only are they working with me, but I'm also, you know, sharing with them on a day-to-day basis my keys to success and staying on a positive and sound way of living.
Kiwan, is it hard? Like, you know, when you talked about when you first came home, I think you probably realized that there would be a difficult transition. But when you lost your job and you had that opening, is that the point where you could have seen yourself going down a bad road, but you didn't? Like, is it hard to stay on the right track?
Well, yeah, it's tough. I mean, it wasn't easy. It's not easy, but it's worth it. You know, when I was faced with the you know, go left, go right, I just, you know, stayed on the track. You know, I had plenty of opportunities to get back in the game if I wanted to, but I just felt like if I just put the same amount of energy into doing positive as I did when I was doing negative, I just knew I could be successful because I had a skill. You know, I had the drive, but I had the will, you know, to persevere and to be able to see my goals and my dreams come to fruition. I knew that, you know, if I can create a buzz, that I know I could be, you know, successful. So that's what I did. I just stayed on track and, you know, came up with short-term goals and long-term goals. And, you know, I'm here, 15, almost, you know, what is it, 15, a little 15 years later.
Yeah. And how many employees do you have? How many employees at Favorite Desserts?
Between both stores, I have about 12, 13 employees.
There
Look
you
at
go.
You, Kiwan, I'm so happy for you, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It really is a great story of well, as I was saying, rehabilitation, redemption, renewal, right. And a bunch of other words that start with R-E. But it's really a great story, Kiwan.
I really appreciate it. I really appreciate you guys.
Well, listen.
Let me tell my story.
What's that website again, Kiwan?
It's Favor, F-A-V-O-R. Desserts, DESSERTS. And also they can follow me on Instagram at Favor_desserts and on Facebook at Favor Desserts. Yes.
Well, Kiwan, let me tell you, it was so great to have you on the show, sharing your story. I mean, you've inspired me.
Thank you for having me.
And let me tell you, I'm going to take these 5 pounds that you added to my body today, and I'm going to make sure they're gone by the next couple of days. Man.
Oh, come on. The holidays are coming.
No, I don't gain weight during the holidays. Okay. But listen, I keep wanting to say something. You keep start talking. I'm sorry. But go ahead. It'll come back.
Okay. Tell you what. Let's take a break. Maybe during the break you can remember what it is. Hang on for a second, and we'll come back from the break and here on WGN Radio, WGN Nightside True Crime with Kelly Richmond Pope and me, Bill Professor Fraud Cressy of Governor State University. And she's giggling. And on the line we have
Kiwan Hester. He's joined us for this past hour. He is outstanding gentleman with amazing story. Great, 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 great baked goods from Favor Desserts.
FavorDesserts.com. Get your Christmas order in.
You better hurry up.
Yeah.
So, Kiwan, thank you so much for joining us tonight, because I know it is late and you have to get up early. So just thank you for being here and sharing your story and inspiring us all, okay?
Thank you so much. Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kiwan. And now, coming up after the news, it's going to be Kelly and me doing our usual feature called
Dupe of the Week.
So going through the news, some of the big dupes and fraud stories and other things that have happened during the past week. And we've got some doozies of dupes.
Oh, yeah, we do.
Oh,
we
yeah.
We really do.
Okay, so now let's go to the news. Ads.
We don't need you to add.
Harmony. Yeah. It's the Dupe of the Week song. Thank you, producer Mike behind the glass. He came up with that one. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. You're a genius.
Let's not go that far.
Okay, you're fairly smart. How about that?
That works.
Okay,
thank you.
It works. Okay. Wow, it's Tuesday morning. Wow, Tuesday morning, and we're getting close to Thanksgiving Day.
Do you know what today is?
Today is Tuesday of International Fraud Awareness Week.
Right. Today, we are debuting our Red Flag Mania experience.
Red Flag Mania experience. Yeah. Red Flag Mania. I've heard of that. What's that about again?
Red Flag Mania is an immersive investigative experience that I created with Ronnie Jackson. Hey, Mike, you should come. Mike should come. You should come, Bill. Yeah, but you have some excuse, like you're teaching or something?
Yeah, it's like...
You should bring your students.
My full-time job. But I am tenured now, so what the... No, I'm still a good professor. And so, immersive experience. So, red flags. This has to deal with China?
Well, no.
Oh,
it has to deal with... teaching people how to be observant of the red flags that we often overlook.
Ah, red flags signaling like fraud?
Or problems. You know, because you think about it, a red flag doesn't always have to mean that there is fraud, but it should mean something that you should pay attention to and maybe look further into. And so we're hosting this event, it's a free event. Red Flag Mania is a... one of the sponsors of International Fraud Awareness Week. So you can find us on the International Fraud Awareness Week website, and you should come. It's a free event.
And where? How do I find? Go to that website, and that'll.
Well, yeah, but it's at DePaul. It's registration start. Doors open at 6:00. Registration starts at 6:30, and the investigation starts at 7:00.
Ooh, so you become like a fraud investigator.
Yeah, because you think about it, the best way to teach students how to search for fraud is throw them into a real scenario. Better than a simulation. Not a simulation. It's immersive. So it feels like you are actually in it.
Right.
That's all I can tell you.
Well, I think both of us, and I practice for a while and such, and we've both seen actual events, and I often describe it as the surprise party after effect, where if you've ever had a surprise party pulled on you, you know, you're like, oh my goodness, I didn't see this coming. And then after a couple of hours, you go, yeah, all the signs were there. You know, people were sneaking balloons in. I saw that. Or I saw they ordered a cake from favordesserts.com. You know, of course, all the red flags were there. And this so often happens. You've got that office manager who you're paying $40,000 a year, and they keep coming back from these with stories of their cruises and vacations and how much they dropped in Vegas last weekend. And it's like, where are they getting all that money? And it's only after you find out they've been embezzling do you go, oh, that was it. Yeah. So being aware of those red flags up front can save you a lot of money later on.
It sure can. So, with that being said, let's take a look at some of these dupes of the week that probably had red flags all over them.
Some of the dupe of the week candidates for this week. Okay. Well, Kelly, you sent me this first one, and this was an article from the Seattle Times. And titled Anatomy of a Fraud, Fake Billionaires, $6 Million Scams Claimed Dozens of Local Victims. And the first thing you see is this photograph of a muscle-bound guy wearing shorts and no shirt. And that's what got your attention?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even see that. I just saw the $6 million scam.
Yeah.
Because when I first saw it, I thought it was one of these love scams again.
Ah.
But then I read more.
No. Well, actually, if I could read a little bit it. Yeah. Last January, federal prosecutors in Seattle went to court to block a 27-year-old Newcastle man from being released on bail. Keenan Alexander Gracie had been arrested just before Christmas on charges of a $6 million stock fraud that had claimed dozens of victims in Washington and California. And prosecutors were increasingly certain that Gracie would simply return to stealing as soon as he made bail. Indeed, nearly everything federal officials had learned about the athletic and charismatic young man suggested an almost reflexive tendency to defraud. As it says here, Gracie lied constantly and brilliantly, according to investigators. At the height of his scamming, prosecutors say, Gracie was routinely passing himself off as 6'9", Oxford-educated professional athlete and British aristocrat with palatial mansions and insider knowledge of multi-million-dollar stock deals.
Sounds like you, Bill.
Well, some of that. certainly not the 6'9" part, but neither was he 6'9", because prosecutors say Gracie was a Canadian whose father worked for Boeing. He never went to college or held an actual job in the U.S.
So he just made the whole thing up.
He used a fake British accent, and worse yet, he wore lifts in his shoes. Yet, with no formal training, Gracie had somehow mastered complex financial concepts and strategies, cultivated the persona of a larger-than-life business-savvy playboy, complete with a Lamborghini, which he leased, and I love this one, $225,000 a month Beverly Hills estate.
So he had a little bit of money.
Wow. He took the money from these investors, and $225,000 a month rent? Wow.
Wow.
But then he used that persona to groom an ever-expanding network of victims. Frequently, he persuaded these folks to liquidate their life savings, take out ruinously high-interest loans and rope in their own family and friends.
I wonder what the red flags here were.
Well, I think the lifts in the shoes, for one thing. Perhaps most worryingly, prosecutors said Gracie showed almost no fear of consequences. When his first full-scale stock scheme was shut down by the U.S. securities regulators in May of 2018, Gracie simply changed his name and the name of the company, raked in another $2 million, and was recruiting new victims almost until the day he was arrested.
You know what is interesting about what you're reading is just the ease of creating and defrauding and just change your name and start this business and just tell people, hey, invest in this. It's amazing that he could get away with this.
Well, as I say, the arrogance of this guy in that, as I say, usually fraudsters will at least lay off for a while. Okay. But he went, almost the next day, went right back to ripping people off. So, yeah. So he's, and some of these people, getting people to, hand over their entire life savings just because he was good at selling it with nothing to back him up. And going back to our first guest tonight, Steve Barnett, you got to do your due diligence. Don't give people your money without checking it out first. And especially don't give up your life savings to somebody just because he looks impressive without a shirt on.
Well, you think everybody is looking for that fast dollar, right? So,
well, tell you what, that's candidate number one for dupe of the week, and let's do some more candidates right after this here on WGN 720. Yeah,
I get different after midnight.
Yeah, it's after midnight. It's Tuesday. I could, still say, hey, it's after midnight, and it's WGN True Crime with Kelly Richmond Pope and Professor Bill Cressy, Professor Fraud of Governor State University, and we're doing the highly regarded and highly demanded Dupe of the Week segment.
Why don't we just say award-winning?
Award-winning. Why
Mike
not?
Mike can give us an award. Mike, give us an award.
Okay.
I give you the award for best cake.
There you go. You know what? We really ought to, print up little certificates and mail them out to the fraudsters that get the Dupe of the Week every week, And right now we've got one guy in the running, our friend in the Seattle and California, the Canadian who is ripping people people off saying that, yes, he's a British aristocrat.
I mean, you can say whatever you want to say these days, right? It just doesn't matter.
There you go. Okay, I've got a second one for you for dupe of the week.
All right, what you
okay,
got?
Okay, and this is a little scheme that we should be a little cautious of right now, going to the holidays, buying and selling, and people buying stuff off of eBay and paying with PayPal. This actually comes out of England. Okay, where you had a woman in England who sold her camera with, you know, shipping on the auction website eBay. And the person who purchased the item bought it in the early morning hours on October 23rd. And then later on, a couple hours later, messaged to change the address to ship it to. The scam buyer claimed that he had bought the camera as a gift for his daughter, but forgot to change the delivery address on his account, and therefore asked that she send the camera to a new address, which he then provided in a message. Okay, that sounds cool. Okay. The person bought the item at around 2 in the morning and then messaged back at 5 a.m. saying, oops, change the address. He asked me to send it to the new address, and they did. Now, the problem is she changed the address on just on PayPal,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And due to the buyer changing the address, PayPal, it's a little complicated
here. You're losing me, man.
Okay.
You're losing me.
Joanna said that eBay buyer didn't go through the auction site, but went straight to PayPal to file a complaint. So what happened is, okay, they changed the address. She did not inform eBay the change of the address. She simply shipped it off to this new address. Okay, so this scamster gets the camera, mm-hmm. PayPal, you know, sends money to the photographer, the woman selling the camera. Okay, then after he receives the camera at this other address, he then files a complaint with PayPal saying, I never got it. And so PayPal checks and says, yep, there's the address. It never got delivered. And then then took the money back and gave it back to the fraudster. So the fraudster's got the camera, has his
That's
money
so
back.
Complicated.
It is, but what a loophole!
Yeah.
So you know, if you sell something on eBay, and somebody then approaches and says, "Hey, change the address, please. Go back on eBay, change the whole thing with the new address, so that you don't get caught in this kind of a loophole where." PayPal says, yeah, according to this, it was never delivered to the address that was there on eBay. Therefore, you lose. We're taking the money back, and you're never getting the camera back either, the goods back. So
I mean, this,
be careful out
just
there.
Just the thought of developing that scheme is just...
Well, I think we talked some weeks ago about a scheme where somebody would pull off an online ripoff by looking into the obituary pages of small town newspapers and then coming up with these phony addresses of dead people, and then you were trying to you'd have to try tracking it down. So that's dupe number two for the dupe of the weeks. So let's see what else we have here.
I want to do this one.
Sure,
go ahead. I'm going to do the canned tuna maker Bumblebee preps for bankruptcy filing. I wonder if Mike ate Bumblebee tuna.
Oh, my gosh. When I was in college, that's pretty much all I ate straight from the can. Straight from the can.
Well, you won't be eating it anymore, my friend.
That then the little noodles in the cup, right?
I did do the ramen, but you know what? As far as tuna go, I did do Bumblebee, but I was kind of a chicken of the sea guy myself.
They're in this too.
How about Starkist?
Starkist was also very good.
Okay, they're in that too.
Never oil, though, only water.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Well, they're in hot water right now.
No.
Oh, yeah.
College students all over the world are freaking out right now with the story.
I tell you, because they were bad. What happened, Kelly?
Well, Bumblebee Foods LLC is preparing to file for bankruptcy within days over mounting legal expenses stemming from its involvement in a conspiracy to fix prices on canned tuna.
They're fixing tuna prices.
They're fixing tuna prices. They're fixing tuna prices. The San Diego-based company, owned by London-based private equity firm Lion Capital, is expected to file a Chapter 11 petition shortly and will put itself up for sale, the people said. Bumblebee didn't respond. Bumblebee, you can call us, though. If anybody that works for Bumblebee that's listening to us, give us a call. So Bumblebee didn't respond. So Lion Capital, which was a private equity firm, bought Bumblebee in 2010 for $980 million.
Hmm.
And so they pled guilty in 2017 and paid a $25 million fine for having formed a cartel with its two main competitors, Chicken of the Sea and Star Kids Company.
You know,
look at that. All over tuna.
Remember the movie The Informant?
Oh, yeah.
It was about price fixing.
Sure.
And I'm wondering who the whistleblower here was.
I don't know, but you know,
Charlie the Tuna, maybe.
Speaking of The Informant, I interviewed the main star from, not Matt Damon, but the real person.
Oh, well, okay. But yeah, who was right here in Illinois.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I got a little audio piece from the whistleblower.
Okay, actually. Here's the whistleblower. Okay.
Keep it down. Dang Bumblebee. Price fixing. All right.
There's the Bumblebee. Do you have Charlie Tuna saying, sorry, Charlie?
He's calling in tomorrow, actually.
Yeah, can I tell you something? Those commercials, they were great little animated commercials. Charlie the Tuna always wanted to get caught so he could end up in a can of tuna. And it was like, oh, sorry, you're not good enough, you know, but why? Yeah, you know. So wait, we've got Charlie Tuna on the line.
Here it is, Charlie.
Natural spring water, no calories. Bring me 10 more.
10 more?
Gift wrap for Starkist.
Charlie,
Starkist will take me out of sheer gratitude.
Starkist tuna in natural spring water. Mmm, delicious taste, but half the calories of tuna in oil.
These are lies.
Difference.
Yeah. Come and get your gift, Starkist.
Charlie. Starkist tuna in natural spring water.
Man.
Yeah, I think we found the whistleblower. Charlie finally got back at Starkist for not not picking him. You know, he blew the whistle. But wait a second. So this is Bumblebee. They filed for bankruptcy because they had to pay a $25 million fine. Okay. And they indicted. The CEO. Wow. But the other ones are involved as well.
Yeah, from the cartel. Yeah.
Okay, and wow, it
Starkist was recently hit. This is Michael's Eden. Starkist was recently hit with a $100 million criminal penalty for its involvement in the conspiracy.
Wow,
they're going down. I don't know who's going to eat tuna. Where are you going to get the tuna from?
So are there backdoor tuna meetings that are going on where these people are fixing these prices? Because I'm guessing in like other countries like China and everything, this is actually a big part of the market.
Yeah,
and now in the U.S., nobody's eating a lot of canned food anymore. So is this why they're trying to dupe Americans?
I guess so. They're meeting in smoke-filled rooms, or maybe oil-filled rooms. You know,
no. Guys.
Do they meet in nets, too?
And you know what? In addition to all of this, the price-fixing, Bumblebee is also getting sued for wrongly labeling its tuna as being dolphin-safe.
Oh, no. Not the dolphins.
Okay, can get that sound effect in there? Yeah. Flipper.
I used to like Flipper. But you know what? I used to like Flipper, but do you realize it was the same show every single time?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
it was the same show.
Yeah, and so many of those shows were. But and going back to Mike's point, Bumblebee's earnings have slowed during a slowdown in the canned tuna industry as young consumers prefer fresh food and gravitate towards newer and more upscale brands of tuna. So those cans of tuna, that's kind of on the way out. You want your nice... You stay away from the Bumblebee there, Flipper. The folks like that, you know, tuna tartare and you know, all that stuff. You know, they see at the upscale restaurants and not the old can of tuna. You open it up, you dump it out, add a little mayonnaise, maybe a little lemon juice.
Well, I thought it was a perfect thing because in college you don't have a lot of bowls and it was this make your own bowl. It was the tin can,
which you
put like the mayonnaise or barbecue sauce in, mixed it up, and then you ate it for dinner. This is a travesty. Okay, I'm very
affected
by this.
We've got a look here with the barbecue sauce on tuna.
All the cake, the tuna, the barbecue sauce. I don't know what's about to happen. Yeah, okay.
We need some Tums.
And the can of tuna also comes in handy when a stray cat shows up on your front porch. You know,
because I can see you doing that. You did that.
That's how we got our cat.
Really?
Yeah. We this cat showed up on our front porch and was like meow meow. Yeah. And so we don't have any cat food. Well, we got a can of tuna. Put the can of tuna out, and we had we now have a cat.
You know the thing about tuna. I want to ask you both this question. How long does the tuna sit in your cabinets?
As long as you want. Well, if it's Mike's cabinet, not all that long. Okay, he's dumping barbecue sauce on it.
Shelf life on tuna. This is why they're fixing prices, guys. There's a long shelf life on tuna.
Well, it is. In fact, you see, in addition to the traditional can, it's also in pouches. You know, and they last for a good long time. Because, yeah.
Did you really want to know how long it lasted?
Yes, yeah. Please.
So this is funny because I just threw out a can of tuna that was from 2016 in my apartment last week. But how long can you keep canned tuna after the expiration date?
Yes.
About 3 to 5 years.
Oh, no.
Unproperly stored. Yeah. Properly stored unopened canned tuna will stay best for about 3 to 5 years, although it will usually remain safe to use after that. Yeah. And you can use it, so I'm guessing it could go maybe...
But
9 years?
But think about this. This is the reason for the price fixing. Mm-hmm. Because these aren't cyclical sales. 3 to 5 years or 10 years on a can?
Yeah. Yeah.
See, what they need are some survivalists, you know.
Yes.
Their bottled water, their ammo, and some cans of tuna.
Once Y2K came and went, I think all the tuna prices skyrocketed back down.
I still have my Y2K supplies handy, you know, just in case this whole thing melts down. But
And you know what? You can't tell when tuna goes bad, too, because it just always smells like
ew.
Tuna.
That's true, you know. Welcome to Tuna Talk here on WGN 720 AM. Yeah.
Well, but you know what we're really talking about, though? This is the reason for the price fixing. I mean, all of these things, this extended shelf life.
Mm-hmm. A critical combination of conditions. Mm-hmm.
Do you think this is going to happen with any other food, too? I mean, is this the route we're going to go on now?
Well, what else? What other foods?
Ramen noodles can sit on the shelf.
Pringles
can't, well, unopened.
Unopened Pringles, and the way they're packaged, they could survive a nuclear attack, I think.
that's sealed.
Yeah. Well, what will survive? Cockroaches and Pringles. That's going to be it. And cans of tuna. So that's going to be it. Let's see. How about another candidate for dupe of the week here?
We haven't gotten to my favorite one yet, though.
Okay. Well, let's hang off on the favorite one, because I've got one here, Warren County, Mississippi. They obviously did not see All the Queen's Horses, which is that award-winning movie produced and directed by my partner in crime, Kelly Richmond Pope, because we have the former Warren County bookkeeper. First of all, what county has the title bookkeeper? Okay, pleads guilty to embezzlement. Mississippi State Auditor Shad White announced that Paula Hunt, former bookkeeper for Warren County Tax Collector's Office, pled guilty to embezzlement, and she was sentenced to spend at least 8 years in prison and to repay the money she embezzled from the county in monthly payments after she's released. She was arrested by special agents of the State Auditor's Office in May of this year for embezzling $140,000 from the tax collector's office because she collected cash payments from individuals paying bills, concealed the crime by transferring the money between multiple office bank accounts, and her scheme was discovered when one of the accounts she manipulated was overdrawn. Okay, folks, if you're going to embezzle, at least, you know... don't write an overdraft on the account, okay? That's going to be, I mean, talk about your red flag mania. You know, that's going to be a red flag right there. You know?
Be smart about your theft.
Yeah, so really, but that's, for $140,000 embezzlement, she got 8 years. That's
pretty hefty.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Well, they say The auditor said, it's good to see justice done and a substantial prison sentence handed down.
That doesn't...
Ms. Hunt's case sends a message that stealing from the taxpayers is not a victimless crime.
That means Rita Crunwell should have gotten 50 years, according to this judge.
Well,
if this person got 8 years for 140, Rita should have gotten...
And they've already recovered 50,000 of the 140,000. So, So that's another candidate for our dupe of the week this week. That's rather, I mean, really, 8 years is, but that might be the standard down in Jackson, Mississippi.
I'm heading on Sunday. I'm heading to Front Royal, Virginia, to show my film and talk to their community. They have a fraud issue in that area, so I'm trying to use my film for good.
That would be a good thing to do. Very good thing to do.
I should have sent you that news story as a dupe of the week.
Well, there you go. Let's see. Of course, my favorite category of fraud, art fraud.
Oh, you do like this.
I do like art fraud.
What is it about it?
This is an interesting story from England, from the Daily Mail. And the title is Raiders of the Lost Art. Get it?
I got it. And
this is a detective. He's actually from the Netherlands, named Arthur Brand, and he's been dubbed the Indiana Jones of the art world. And his latest find was a long-lost ring from Oscar Wilde that was stolen from an Oxford college and reemerged on the black market after the Hatton Garden heist. But, he also found Hitler's horses and a stolen Picasso. And so he's got connections throughout the art underworld.
Didn't know there was one, did you?
But you might know.
You might know some people in the art underworld.
Well, I'm Professor Fraud. Of course I do. So here's this rumors where people thought maybe it was melted down. And then rumors resurfaced that a gang of elderly British gangsters burgled an underground safe deposit box in London's Hatton Garden. And and they have a photo of how the room that was stolen from was just ransacked. This was the one item that they were looking for, and the Dutch art detective Arthur Brand found it.
I think I missed the fraud part. What's the fraud?
Well, it's not so much fraud as it was just thievery. But the idea that there is a stolen art underground where this art is being traded. As I say, stolen art and art is often used as money laundering as well.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Is it easy because it's a big enough ticket item to sort of mix the money to integrate it?
It's that, and it's the idea that it's easy to pass. I mean, you might have a very expensive Picasso or whatever, most government investigators are not trained to know, that's a $5 million Matisse. I mean, you could pass it off as, a poster or an art project from college. And it gets right across the borders. So, you're not going to declare it being what it is, but the collectors know what it is. And there's a lot of folks, a lot of money, willing to pay big bucks for stolen, objects. So, you get the cash here. You either buy or steal the object, bring it across borders, and then you can sell it on the other side. So, good stuff.
You said a lot of words there.
I did. Well, that's why I'm a professor. We're good at saying a lot of words, aren't we?
No, not always.
Well, I am. Sorry. Okay. Hey, here's another one. This one. From our friends at Forbes. You've written for Forbes.
I still write for Forbes when I write.
Okay. And this is about fraudsters who made $2 million in 4 months by selling fake Airbnb, Uber, and Lyft shares.
Fake ones.
Fake ones, yeah.
Let's hear this scheme.
Okay.
Fake ones.
Over the last year, investors have been receiving attractive offers of shares in some of the world's hottest tech companies, Airbnb, Lyft, Uber, etc. New York-based Knightsbridge Private Partners. Now, that sounds like a that's a good name for an equity group, right? Knightsbridge Private Partners. They claim to have pre-initial public offering of shares ahead of the initial public offerings of those multi-billion-dollar businesses. But the stocks were entirely imaginary, and multiple investors were duped. They used the word duped.
Yeah, we should have
into paying $2.1 million in just 4 months between October of 2018 and January of this year, according to court filings.
So how I'm trying to understand the fakeness. So they just told them that it was and it wasn't.
Yeah, they just
told
them.
They did no due diligence.
Yeah, it's like, ooh, we've got an inside track. You know, the Uber is going to be coming out with an initial public offering, and we've got, you know, 2,000 shares of Uber before it comes out. You know, it's not going to happen, folks. Okay. Let's see, they had Lyft, 250 shares of Lyft at $63 each, and they wrote them a big old check. And the fraudsters even created websites to perpetrate their crime. Okay.
I tell you.
Yeah. And
the things that we will do to defraud for a dollar.
Yeah. And they had an imaginary address for Knightsbridge. Okay.
Let's think about this. How would you protect yourself in this case?
Okay. Well, as I say, one of the things that, you know, some people do is, you know, look at the address, go to Google Street View and look at it. And so what they see this beautiful red brick building that had a Mercedes-Benz parked outside. So you think, hey, this looks nice, you know. Turns out it was a child care center called Alphabet Land. So also Google the address. See if Alphabet Land comes up instead of Knightsbridge Investments or whatever. So again, as often has been said, if it sounds too good to be true,
it is.
It is, yeah. And, you know, oh, you're a special person and you're going to get to buy the shares before the initial public offering. No, not going to happen.
No.
So yeah, we've got a couple of good candidates there.
So we're going to take a break and talk about some more. My favorite story is coming up.
Sure is. Okay, here's a little break, and we'll be right back on WGN 720 AM. Yeah, it's Tuesday morning in Chicago. You don't like that? Come on. It's
late.
12:46 here in Chicago, broadcasting at 50,000 watts.
We're just gonna go into this talking.
Okay. Well, who are you?
I'm a tired Kelly Pope.
And I'm a jazzed Professor Fraud Bill Cressy of Governor State University. The State University of Suburban Chicago, and we're broadcasting on WGN 720 AM. Okay, now there's the story that you've been wanting to talk about almost all night, and this one just broke. Yeah.
And it's someone from our own. It's one of our own. He's from our tribe.
He
is.
He's a professor. Known as Professor Money Laundering.
He is, but he is known as that. His expertise. He's one of us, Bill.
Well,
he teaches corruption.
He's a criminal, so he's not one of us.
No, but he's from the academy. He teaches at
Police Academy.
He teaches at the University of Miami.
Oh, well, there you go.
He was an expert on money laundering, and he was indicted today for money laundering.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's read the article, shall we? Or I'll. For years, and I love his name, Bruce Bagley. I mean, that sounds like a name from you know, Marvel. Okay. Bruce Bagley has taught in the University of Miami's International Studies program. He's one of the nation's foremost experts on money laundering in Latin America. Now, that might be because, at least according to the FBI, he's been helping launder money out of Latin America. And, you know, that's the thing. If you want an expert, you know, get someone who's been doing it. Right?
But you know what, though? Maybe he was pressured. Maybe he didn't really. Maybe, you know.
Or maybe.
Just like in the show, the Netflix series with Jason Bateman. Ozarks.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. He was pressured. The other partner was pressured by the cartel.
Or maybe he was simply doing academic research. We've had cases of that before. It's like, oh no, I was just doing academic research at gentlemen's clubs, and that's where they that's where all of the research grant money was going. Yes, they're tracking those $1 bills. Okay. In any event, today. Actually, it would have been yesterday. Federal prosecutors in Manhattan charged Bagley with laundering nearly $3 million in dirty money out of Venezuela between November of 2017 and October 2018. Bloomberg first reported on the charges yesterday afternoon. Quote, Bruce Bagley, a college professor and author of the book...
How to be a money launderer?
Pretty much, yeah. How-to book. Drug trafficking, organized crime, and violence in the Americas today. You know, allegedly opened...
Now he can write his own. He can write his memoir now.
There you go. He can write an autobiography, yeah. Allegedly opened bank accounts for the express purpose of laundering money for corrupt foreign nationals.
I think he might have been pressured. I think there's more to this story than this. He wouldn't risk this like this. I just do. I really do. I really do. It's always a little bit more complicated.
Well, I've known some pretty squirrely college professors in my day, so who knows? But according to the U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Berman, quote, moreover, the funds Bagley was allegedly laundering were the proceeds of bribery and corruption stolen from the citizens of Venezuela. Today's charges of money laundering and conspiracy should serve as an object lesson for Bruce Bagley, who now faces a potential tenure, get it, tenure?
Yeah.
In federal prison. So the U.S. attorney being witty there. If convicted, Bagley...
When convicted.
I said, if convicted.
When convicted.
Well, I'm the attorney here. I will say if.
When.
Okay. Bagley, a 73-year-old resident of Coral Gables, Florida, faces up to 20 years in federal prison.
You don't think he's going to be convicted? Do you think he's going to be convicted? How many people do you know that have gotten off from money laundering?
The jury decides such things. It's up to the finders of fact.
I'm just asking you a question of how many people, how many cases do you know where people get off for money laundering?
It depends on how many other charges and what kind of a plea deal we can work out here. So
not for money laundering.
Okay.
Not for money laundering.
Let's see. The professor did not immediately respond to an email from New Times of Miami.
Hey, Bagley, if you're out there, join our conversation.
Or maybe. Oh, okay. And what's the phone number for?
312-981-7200. Two professors would love to talk to you.
312-981-7200. And if not, you know, hey, maybe the director of code compliance for the city of Miami could call. That's Bruce Bagley's daughter.
Really?
Yes. Bagley's daughter, Adele Valencia, is the director of code compliance for the city of Miami.
Oh, wow.
So there you go. the University of Miami says that Bagley has been suspended from his teaching gig. So
you must have a more recent one. I thought he was, I think I read that he was put on, like, you know, some kind of...
academic suspension or something. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, this thing has been bubbling all day. So, according to this, the university, quote, this is from the university, of Miami was made aware Monday afternoon of the indictment filed against Professor Bruce Bagley. In light of this development, Professor Bagley is on administrative leave.
Yeah.
As this is a personal matter in an ongoing investigation, the university has no further comment at this time. Yeah, it's probably very wise of them, you know, distance themselves. I mean, at least fortunately, this time it doesn't involve the University of Miami football team, says the Notre Dame graduate. Yes. According to the feds, Bagley opened a series of bank accounts tied to an unnamed entity, which he owned, listed as, in the federal indictment, as they often do, was listed as Company One.
I'm telling you, he was pressured.
Okay. In 2016, the feds say he opened a fresh account at a bank in Weston, Florida. And between 2016 and 2017, his account showed barely any activity. However, beginning in November 2017, Bagley began receiving mysteriously huge chunks of cash, approximately $200,000 a month from bank accounts in Switzerland and the United Arab Emirates. We're both professors. We don't get that kind of stuff coming through.
Because he was pressured, I'm telling you.
Okay. The accounts claim to have been tied to a wealth management firm and a, quote, purported food company, end quote. Maybe it was tuna. The feds say Bagley then withdrew 90% of the money via a cashier's check. Wow.
Listen, he was pressured. There is no way someone that is an expert in this space would do that. I mean, he was pressured. You have to see that.
No.
There's no way. Yes.
No.
There's no way.
No.
That's like you committing fraud. Like, that's like you embezzling and signing the back of it with Bill Cressy. Like, you know what. Not that you're going to do this, but you know what not to do.
Well, what I know not to do is any of these things this guy did. I do know some things, but I'm not going to get into it on the air, you know, but way to get around it. But instead, you know what we should do, Kelly?
Take a break. eat cake,
she's
take a break.
Eats cake, and we'll take a break. So let's take a break. We'll be back a little bit here on WGN AM 720. And we're back to finish off the show.
With your mouth filled with cake from Favor Desserts. You're still eating cake. It's 1 in the morning, Mr. Cressy. It's
yes,
1 in the morning.
FavorDesserts.com, but it's 5 o'clock somewhere, right?
It's so good, though. It really is.
It really is. That is good. Oh, that pound cake. Oh, yeah.
He made it. It's his own signature recipe.
Yeah.
Did you hear all the things? Five flavors with a drizzle of something on it? Goodness.
Good stuff at favordesserts.com. But he was on the show. What was his name again?
Kewan Hester was on the show from Favor Desserts. David Harris from Prosperity. And your...
Steve Burness of the Chicago and Northern Illinois Better Business Bureau. Quite a lineup we had. And then we had our dupes of the week, and we got to vote for who wins the dupe of the week award. And now you think he was forced into it, which would make Bruce Bagley, the professor Bruce Bagley.
You know, I'm thinking about it though.
The dupe of the week.
The tuna story.
You think the tuna story?
I think it's the tuna story.
Well, we had the most laughs over the tuna story, so yeah, make it.
Price fixing over tuna, that was pretty clever.
So the fishy fish story is going to be this week's dupe of the week. We got to print up that certificate and send it over to the Bumblebee Tuna folks, and maybe another copy Starkist and Charlie Tuna or Chicken the Sea. You know. There you go. Oh, that's right. Sorry, Flipper. You got caught in the net. Okay. Now, we talk about getting caught in the net in a federal investigation. Well, sorry, Flipper. You got caught in this net as well. Well, that's going to do it for us for this week.
Yep.
Come back. Join us again next Monday night at 10 o'clock for True Crimes.
And Dupe of the Week. And who knows?